I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC. No.
Man, I hope you made it to the Stardome this weekend to see Bert Kreischer. It was fun having him on the show on Friday for a couple of segments to get our weekend started off right. He was funny. The course at Shinnecock was not as fun on Thursday, Friday, but Saturday apparently was too tough. So the USGA made it, quote unquote, fair or easier on Sunday. And I don't know about you, after watching Saturday as just a casual golf fan, LT, I wanted more of it Sunday. I figured we'd already jumped into that into the pool. Let's go ahead and keep it fair on Sunday, too, and just keep it just as treacherous. And not ease it up on Sunday, but they eased it up a little bit. They made it, quote unquote, more fair, I guess. And the cream rose to the top, and we had a great finish on Sunday.
I thought it was there was a ton of drama. I mean, look, that's the one thing you can say. I mean, just 15 players break par on Sunday. Only four went lower than two under. I mean, it was one of the most difficult layouts we've ever seen in major history.
When you see Tommy Fleetwood do what he did, though,
yeah,
Does it lessen what he does? Did it all?
I think, to me, the most memorable things from the vast majority of the majors are Sunday charges. And that's why I like what they did on Sunday. I like you. I mean, look what Brooks Koepka, what, shot a 68? I mean, that's not a dazzling round. That is a really good, solid winning round. Dustin Johnson was up there. He couldn't do it. You know, I mean, you had a lot of guys at the top that couldn't do that. So it was obviously extremely well played by Tommy Fleetwood.
I guess my question is this. If I'm Dustin Johnson and I've played the first two rounds at four under, and then you set the course up like you did on Saturday, and it erases my lead, then I want the same type of difficulty on Sunday so that everyone has to deal with. And I know he's got to play the same course on Sunday, but you see, they sort of gave everybody a free pass on Saturday, it seemed like, everyone else back in it.
For Dustin, it was all about the putter. I mean, as bad as his putting was on Saturday, it was worse. 35 putts just yesterday. And if he goes back and watches, and that's one of those where if you lose 42-7 and you turn the ball over six times, you just burn the film, you never look at it again. If I'm DJ, I'm probably not going back and watching. Because on Saturday, some of those putts were within an inch or two. He probably left legitimately 10 to 12 strokes out on the course just Saturday and Sunday just from the putter.
So is this the DJ of old? I mean, there was a time he was the best driver, but he couldn't putt. Is that the DJ of old?
A little bit. It sneaks back in. You know, he's got a checkered past with the U.S. Open. He had a nice lead at Pebble Beach one year, and I think shot an 81 that time, completely blew up in the final round.
They were saying on the broadcast yesterday, he's lost his confidence. They are way overthinking this putt.
Yeah, I know.
And then he would miss it.
Yeah. And you wonder if that was it. I mean, if you start way overthinking it, are you telling yourself it's impossible, you know, rather than just go with your normal routine?
But Brennick became predictable on some of his putts.
Yeah.
You know, he'd get up there on an 8-footer and you were like, he's going to miss it.
He's
going to
burn it on the left.
Yeah, he is. I mean, and it became so consistent. Again, if golf was a team sport, because going into Saturday, and I know I lost a stake on this, but it was the most entertaining stake I've ever lost. I wanted to tell you that, by the way. Because it was riveting watching this and how painful it was for Dustin Johnson. And really, he was still in it until 17 yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
But if this was a team sport, he was minus 145, which in a U.S. Open setting, with the way this course laid out, is a huge favorite going into Saturday. And if this was a team sport, the way he putted, I would have thought this thing was fixed.
I was in the car a lot, and I was listening to the World Cup as I was driving around on Saturday.
Yeah, we won't get into details, but you were like a truck driver this weekend.
I was. And then all of a sudden, I said, the U.S. Open Golf is probably on when the last World Cup game is over. Let me see how far Dustin Johnson's on. And as I turn it on, and it's just the audio of the Fox broadcast, I turn it on, and they're like, another horrible putt from Johnson. He's now six over for the day, and I'm like, what is happening?
That's what happened. Yeah. I mean, it was all putter. Brad, yeah. Do you really remember bad shots on the course from Dustin Johnson?
No, he never. Well, he's never really had that. I mean, well, on Saturday he had the number two, the par three, where he ends up over on the dirt cart path.
Yeah, but with his driver, he's still.
Oh yeah, he's tee to green. He's as good as anybody, or better than anybody, really. Tee to green. It's always been his putter. Do you know who else was confused by, I don't know if you guys have seen this, by the finish of yesterday's action? Paulina Gretzky / Johnson from the New Jersey newspaper, NJ.com, which is basically their AL.com.
Was she in the wrong city?
No, but she thought Dustin had won. According to one of their reporters, he was positioning himself, this reporter was, next to Bob Koepka, father of Brooks Koepka, to gauge his reaction. When Paulina Gretzky and her entourage of a couple of other female friends walks up, by his reporting, Dustin Johnson makes his putt on 18. Quote, the three women, less than careful with their excitement, when Johnson's putt toppled into the hole, the trio erupted in euphorics, hugging, screaming, and arms flailing. Then one asked, did Dustin just win? No. Finished third.
You got to play that off. He's still number one in the world by finishing
his
third.
His wife had no idea.
Did J.R. Smith give her a high five?
But I follow her and him on Instagram.
Right.
This does not surprise me. She is not paying any attention at all. She's having a cocktail somewhere, and they say, hey, Dustin's coming up 18.
Oh,
all right,
let's go watch
him.
She's a little flighty. Do you think she has any idea what her overhead is per month?
No, negative.
No.
Hey, let me ask you this about Koepka, though. Going into 18, and look, he was pretty relaxed because, all he needed was a bogey to make sure he avoided a playoff?
Yeah, he's lucky Tommy Fleetwood didn't make that putt on 18, which is very close.
Yeah,
that would have been different.
You look at Fleetwood, as good as that round was, Dunaway.
He left it on the course.
Both par fives, he didn't birdie either one of those. And he misses that 7.5-footer on 18.
Yeah.
We would have had a playoff. But Koepka on his tee shot, that almost goes to the gallery.
Yeah.
I mean, it hits off the wall. If it goes in the gallery, where we got a one stroke?
No. It's just a drop. There's a designated drop area there, or you would get two club links.
Which is almost where his ball landed.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been all that different.
But if the grandstand wasn't there.
Oh, it could have gone forever.
that thing was heading into
it was a missile.
Oh, it was
OB or...
Yeah, it was a sweeping hook. He's probably in some knee-deep fescue somewhere. Yeah.
Which would have made it really exciting at that point.
Trust me, I've got that shot he hit, and it goes a long way when it lands.
Well, that's one of the things.
That thing comes out hot.
And we do our golf pool in Dunaway. You and I were one of the few to have Tommy Fleetwood. I wanted this thing to get to a playoff because we would have had it today, right?
No, it's used to be. No, it's a two-hole now.
Two-hole.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thing afterwards.
They realized the 18-hole.
They jacked that up too now, too.
Oh, you liked the 18-hole.
I did.
I mean, didn't we get it with Rocco and Tiger? Was that the last time?
We did. And rarely is it as good as that one was. That's why they changed it. And I think the TV partners prefer them to change it. They don't want a whole another day of just two guys walking the golf course.
Fox would be scrambling with the World Cup.
Yeah, that's true. It would have been a nightmare for Fox.
My question is, NASCAR still going on?
Are they on the TNT package right now?
They still do that?
I don't know.
Because there wasn't one mention on Fox. I was like, where is NASCAR today?
That is a good point, because normally that's kind of a fixture on Father's Day, isn't it?
I don't know.
Are they on NBC now?
I don't know. That doesn't start until Daytona, right? In July?
They used to.
Yeah, I'm like a NASCAR guy, but for two weekends in a row, I couldn't find NASCAR at all. I don't even know if they were racing.
You brought up listening to...
No, they were off this weekend.
Okay, they were just off
Father's Day weekend. Because the Firekeepers Casino 400 was last week on Fox.
Right.
And the Toyota Save Mart 350 is next week on FS1. And then the NBC takes over with the Overton's 400, which is in Chicago.
You were listening to a little golf this weekend, and I had it on the PGA channel too. Golf is not that bad to listen to on a radio.
Yeah.
I found the worst sport this weekend, though, because I'm so in tune with the World Cup, at least this weekend. Listening to soccer on the radio is absolutely awful.
Tell people why you're into the World Cup.
Because we did a draft.
Yeah. Of course. We got money
on it. Gambling on this, and that makes everything more interesting.
Then, of course, my first-round pick, Germany. How'd they do yesterday?
They got
beat by the Mexicans.
They took the L.
It's one of the few matches that I've watched every single minute of.
But you want a landmine. I mean, we're going to do all the good stuff here, Paulina Gretzky and this in the first segment. The landmine. A German newspaper had a headline on game day. You know, the preview of the match, game day, the headline says, "Sorry, Mexico, today we build a wall."
Oh, dear.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
But a landmine, because here comes Mexico to put it in their face with a 1-0 win. It was a fantastic. I was trying to think of a college football equivalent. Who is really good, always ranked, never wins it, To me, they're TCU, Oklahoma State. I mean, they're a really good team, and they just never really win the championship.
Well, I watched the game, the Portugal game Friday, and Ronaldo, he seems like such a super down-to-earth guy.
He is.
Dude's a stud, though.
There's no I in team.
Hey,
God.
Do you think Portugal's players would vote him off the squad right now, though? He's the only reason they're still alive.
He's pretty good, but still, I think he knows it.
You think he has his own team bus?
Do you think he lives in a tanning bed?
Hey, but that was one of the best matches I've ever
incredible.
Seen. 3-3, and you had that big showdown there, Spain and Portugal.
That was a huge upset for them to claw a draw out of that, right?
Absolutely. It was not supposed to be close, and he plays with a lot of those guys anyway in the pros, and it's a rivalry game right there, border war.
No, I'm with Rockstar. There's no doubt that Ronaldo's biggest fan is Ronaldo himself, but...
You think he has a mirror in his house?
Above his bed.
If you look like that, would you?
Yes.
I think...
Not a big fan of taxes, though. Neither is Messi.
Who is, right?
But, I mean, Rockstar, he's... I mean, I don't know my soccer, but he's the best player in the world right now, isn't he?
Him and Messi? Yeah.
So,
but if you scored a goal, would you do that stupid power slide?
It's overdone.
I love how Geico's doing it, though. Have you seen how long
every person does the power slide?
Guy just keeps moving. I'd come up with something new, yeah.
But Messi had a rough weekend.
Messi did. He missed a penalty kick. That was the difference. And
I mean, that's the equivalent of, because, I mean, I saw international papers are just destroying him. What would that be the equivalent of? Missing two free throws to end a game to take it to overtime?
To me, it's almost like he's J.R. Smith all of a sudden.
Well, for the goalkeeper and the shooter, the goalkeeper has the disadvantage. You have no idea. You're guessing. So he should make that 90% of the time.
And a good kicker, or the guy that's doing the kicking, right? Yeah. He can fake. I mean, he's got the whole advantage. I'm with you. He's got the whole advantage.
When you're the keeper, you pre-guess, I'm going to jump left.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he's going to shoot left.
And he can, change his step, but he's got to keep moving forward.
Right.
He can't stop
fake it with his left foot and kick it with his right foot.
You know, the unfortunate thing about this is we're all so excited about World Cup after one weekend. Can you imagine if we were actually involved in this, if the Americans actually, if we had a team out there?
Who lost on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'd be any more engaged, Lance, because I just have no faith that they would do anything.
I don't know. There just seems to be, it's like a 90 out of 100, but it would be closer to 100 if we had something out
there. Well, here's the game. If y'all did y'all's draft, who would have picked USA first?
They would have been probably Dunaway, but they would have been like a second or third.
I would not. I will tell you, if the Americans were there, and this is what it's like being an American soccer fan, usually we're in the play in the World Cup. It's like those NBA teams that make the playoffs, but maybe we'll win the first round, but we're not going to the conference finals, and there's no way we're winning a championship.
We're Oklahoma City.
Yeah, but still being in that game is exciting.
Oh,
and it still lasts, at least a couple of weeks?
But Rockstar,
with the Utah Jazz.
With Utah Jazz. When we did our draft, this is the honest to goodness truth, I'm not making this up. I was looking at the Vegas odds, so I was going by that because I don't know who's good or not. And my tiebreaker was I didn't get to do this because the team almost always got picked right in front of me, but I was going to go with a team that I felt like their players feared going home the most with a loss. Like Mexico was very high on my list.
Right.
Because I think Mexican players.
Russia's already at home.
I think they fear going home with a loss. Well, I wanted to take Russia too. I didn't get them too early, but I wanted to take them. Because if ever a team's going to be fixed to do well in this thing, it's going to be Russia.
Well, just the whole tournament, I think, is fixed. I mean, Brazil ties, Spain ties, Germany loses.
Argentina ties.
I mean, you've got all you have all
That was my best of the weekend was the unpredictability of the World Cup.
The top four teams either had a draw or they lost. And I think I texted one of you guys. I hope it went to you guys. Because if it went to someone else, they didn't understand. I said, The machine is in charge over in Russia. The Russian mob is got this tournament fixed.
It was odd considering massive favorites. You know, not only a massive favorite in Germany losing, but the others to go to draws. And most of those draws, you could catch 4 or 5 to 1 odds.
Yeah, for Iceland and Switzerland to tie Argentina and Brazil. I mean, those are pretty big upsets, just being draws.
I didn't get out this weekend. I mean, I was pretty much at the house watching all weekend. I just wonder around town at the different breweries, if you went to Good People, I just wonder what the showing was like.
I don't know about that, Lance, but I could tell you this, and this shocked me. The TV ratings for game number one, which was locally on Fox 6, right? Game one was that was Russia v. Saudi Arabia. A terrible game, by the way. A 5-0, 5-0 game. You let me work in the nil in, I'm learning. The top five television markets for Thursday's World Cup opener. All Tulsa, Oklahoma, 3.0. You all think Tulsa's the soccer capital of the world, right? Austin, Texas, 2.6. Birmingham, Alabama, 2.4.
Wow.
Third highest rating in the entire nation was right here in Birmingham. I mean, behind that was cities like San Francisco and New Orleans. I mean, I don't know where you think soccer fans are concentrated, but obviously a lot of them here in Birmingham. Third in the nation in TV ratings for game one, and that was a terrible game.
It didn't necessarily have to be soccer fans. It could be what they call gamblers.
No, it's fine. I was just curious. Well, my assumption, and we all know what they say about assuming, so let me rephrase since Jim was reminding me of how close the competitors are. But my assumption was, I have a good feeling that Alabama is going to get this class. My question to you guys would be, who do you think is going to be a second place? And I hope you guys have a great Monday.
Well, I feel like it's going to be Georgia or Texas A&M. Probably Georgia when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I would go Georgia or Clemson.
The funny thing, though, about Jimbo Lane, well, I mean, I don't know. A&M recruited pretty well under Sumlin, too, didn't they?
They did.
So,
yeah, but I think it was more top 15 classes, wasn't it?
So he's not necessarily, though, in a huge deficit that he's trying to recover from. Last year, A&M, according to 24/7, was 17th. So there you go. But what I was going to say is if A&M finishes, say, second in recruiting, that only gives you one class that Alabama's had four of, Georgia's had three or four of, LSU should have had three or four of. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's the life of recruiting in the SEC. You get a number one class. Like Ole Miss did that 1 year. They got a number one class. Everybody went crazy. It didn't even get you on an even playing field. Now, you won some games, but it didn't get you on a level playing
field.
Yeah,
but I do think it's a little different, at least the perception with Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze, than what you would have with Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher. I mean, there's already a huge expectation for Jimbo Fisher.
Absolutely. Based on what he's getting paid.
And listen, I think Alabama will end up with the number one recruiting class. But
sure
to say they're running away with it right now, it was sort of like Lance saying it's over on Friday with Dustin Johnson. There are things that still have to be done, and there's a door open for Georgia to get that class.
I cannot believe it took you an hour and 25 minutes to get to that.
Well, I brought it up earlier.
He brought it up earlier.
Yeah, I mean, but you really haven't rubbed it in.
Well, I'm not going to rub it in. I had the whole field. The field is always the way to go.
And if I would have had my number two, I tried to get a number two. It was going to be Koepka.
Oh, you said it was going to be
Justin. It's going to be Rose.
I'm kidding. Koepka wasn't even on the radar.
Yeah. No, I will tell you, though, when you said it's over on Friday.
I really did believe it was. And Dunaway, you will have to give me this. I mean, Dustin Johnson could not have putted any worse.
No.
He left legitimately 10 to 12 strokes out there. Vegas had him a huge favorite, too. Everything imploded the exact way it had to implode. But again, it was still the most enjoyable stake I've ever lost.
And again, it's over part that for some reason rubs me the wrong way. I hate to hear it's over when there's so much left to play. So I was cheering, and I am a Dustin Johnson fan. I was cheering against him just because of the it's over. Just like I like Golden State. I'm a Golden State fan. I was cheering against him because of it's over. No need to play it. But with the U.S. Open, just when you have half the tournament left, it just seemed like it was premature. But as I walked out the door, I thought to myself, it really is over. This guy's not going to lose this thing.
I genuinely
believed it was over because of the way he was driving the ball, and he continued to drive it so well.
I think if you played that nine times out of ten, he probably does win because I don't think he could putt that bad again.
Or if he had a crystal ball and could see, listen, everyone is going to struggle on Saturday, and for the most part, nobody's really going to make a run on Sunday. If you just hit the brakes on at one point and just sort of reset mentally and not worry about this or that, I think he missed several opportunities on Saturday and Sunday to sort of reset mentally and still win the tournament.
You know, that's what's crazy. And Brown, if Koepka doesn't survive 11, and I thought 11 was going to be the big implosion for him to bogey 11.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a major win. And he said afterwards it was like a birdie or even an eagle.
He pumped
really
his fist. I mean, he pumped his fist on a bogey.
I mean, his caddy, you could see how relieved his caddy was coming off 11 to have a bogey. But if he doesn't survive 11 and Tommy Fleetwood doesn't have a record day on Sunday, Dustin Johnson still playing horrible golf on Saturday, Sunday. When's the U.S. Open?
You're right.
That watching Dustin Johnson do what he did from Friday through Sunday reminded me of the comeback in Tuscaloosa of Auburn and Alabama. Alabama had such a big lead, and if at one point they had just mentally reset and just, you know, made a stop in that game and stopped that momentum, I felt like they would have won that game. Dustin Johnson, if he would have just mentally reset and had a good hole, I think he wins the tournament easily. The momentum it was amazing to watch it just all roll downhill for him.
Well, you would love to say, and when you guys are playing, I mean, let's don't even talk about just pros, but when you guys are playing, you'd love to say you can make a double bogey and just flush it and move on, but you can't.
Oh, no.
It doesn't leave your mind.
Yeah. Because then you're thinking, well, I've really got to birdie this next hole. That's to right. Make up that double
yep.
bogey.
Yep.
And the double's not bad for me.
Yeah. Well, it's not for me either, but I know what you're saying. Because when you make one bad hole, now you're pressing to,
that's right.
to make
gotta
that make, back.
That's right. I got to make that up. And then once you make it up, you're only back to where you were. Now I really got to get on the gas. And it just compounds.
The mental side of it all is also amazing. Going through some of these real quick, Gus Malzahn at number 16 overall on the hot seat. Nowhere close to being fired.
Just signed a new contract.
Nowhere close to being fired. Bobby Petrino on the hot seat at 15. Nowhere close to being fired. Kevin Sumlin, 13 at Arizona, nowhere close to being fired.
He hasn't coached a game yet.
Just got hired.
Matt Rhule, number 12 at Baylor, nowhere close to being fired.
Well, I do think they have a formula they use. I don't think this is just random selection.
I'm just saying, nowhere close to being fired.
Yeah, I would think Barry Odom at number 17, nowhere close to being fired.
I don't know about that. They end up missing a bowl this year with.
Well,
with
yeah. Luan. Yeah, yeah. No, I'll give you that.
There are scenarios where I could.
Yeah, but I mean, if Gus Malzahn goes 6-6, he'll be in the top 10 next year. Well, I don't care with his contract.
That's next year, though. That's not right now. But anyway, just quickly, their top 10, and then Brown has a angle I love on this. Their top 10, the hottest coach's seat in football is David Beatty at Kansas, Lovie Smith at Illinois, number 2, Cliff Kingsbury. Number 3 at Texas Tech. I can see that, but I think he'll have the year to save his job. Luke Fickle at number 4. I didn't know Fickle was on that kind of hot seat at Cincinnati. That surprised
me.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
Yeah, I would not put him there. Kalani Sitake at BYU, I think probably is 1 or 2, not at 5, higher. Jim Harbaugh at 6. I'm not buying that yet. Ed Orgeron at 7. I can see that. Major Applewhite at 8.
I see it a little bit. I do.
Maybe. I doubt it. Larry Fedora at 9 at North Carolina. I could see that. Dana Holgorsen at 10. I could see it, but they're going to have such a good year, it won't matter. So that's your top 10. Now, Brown, you had an interesting take on this.
I want to ask two separate questions.
Okay.
First one. We're going to be Lane Kiffin in all these scenarios, two scenarios. Okay. You get to be
Woo!
Lane Kiffin for a day.
Finally, I'm Lane Kiffin.
So you get to be Lane Kiffin for a day, and let's assume Lane Kiffin has another excellent year this year. Wins Conference USA again.
Fair assumption.
Yeah, nice bowl game. And Lane has just slated at Florida Atlantic. And the top 5 jobs on this hot seat list come open.
So Kansas, Illinois, Texas Tech, Cincinnati, and BYU.
You're Lane Kiffin. Which of those do you take?
Well, I like caffeine too much to do BYU. And the other stuff.
BYU would not. I mean,
could
they
have multiple,
even
multiple,
poke a stick in his direction.
Multiple of BYU.
It would have to be Texas Tech.
I mean, how yucky is that, though?
Yeah, just because it seems to fit him better.
But, you know, Kingsbury has gone out there with a.
He wouldn't take any of those jobs. He would not take any of those jobs.
Isn't that crazy? Before I take any of those jobs. I don't think Michigan is open, and I don't think Lane fits Michigan. LSU of the top 10.
Well, there's three jobs he'd take in the top 10 that are actually reasonable.
My next question, I was going to ask you to rank the top 10 jobs. So LSU and Michigan are at the top. I get that.
Well, let's not include Michigan because I agree with Dunaway. I don't think it's a possibility. Yeah. I think LSU would be one.
I think that's a possibility. There is a scenario with life in the SEC of Ed Orgeron being 6 wins and going to the Birmingham Bowl or 5 wins, not going to a bowl at all, that Ed Orgeron's out.
Okay, and we've talked about this. Joe Oliva, more than likely, your athletic director at LSU, would be out with Orgeron. So depending on who the new guy is, if you had your opportunity to retain Dave Aranda or get Lane Kiffin.
I would get Lane Kiffin, and I love Dave Aranda. And I am fascinated to see what happens when Dave Aranda becomes a head football coach because I think the guy's got what it takes. But I've seen Lane Kiffin do it, Lance. I've seen him do it at numerous places, and it's been hit or miss some. But I think I'm getting a hungrier Lane Kiffin this time around.
But I would say this for LSU fans, both are really good options.
Either Kiffin or Aranda?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think LSU would be one. To me, I would go Carolina 2 and West Virginia 3. I don't know if you guys agree.
Taking Michigan off the board.
Taking Michigan off the board, but seems like Fedora had Carolina really close 3 years ago. And with that style of offense in that conference, you know, you could shake it loose and do something nobody's done before.
One reason I wanted to ask this, though, because it's a non-Power 5 job, but that Houston job has been a springboard. I mean, the last two coaches, correct me if I'm wrong, before Applewhite have taken the Texas and the Texas A&M job, right?
Yeah, but if you're Lane Kiffin, you felt like you were passed over before for Major Applewhite, do you really want to circle back around to that job knowing there's bigger jobs out there? Like, it's like, I might not even give them another opportunity.
Yeah.
I would have taken that job 2 years ago. I'm not going to take that job now.
North Carolina is an interesting job. They've never really done much. Mack Brown, you know, when I was a teenager, always had them as a one-loss team, and that one loss was always Florida State. And then there's West Virginia, where I just don't know what you can do there. And I'm wondering if Holgorsen has almost kept them out right now.
There just aren't a lot of good jobs that are going to come open for Lane Kiffin.
I know. I was looking at that and thinking the same thing.
Like, I'm all the way down on this coach's hot seat ranking, coacheshotseat.com.
You're looking at their formula now, aren't you?
No, I'm just all the way down.
Yeah.
I mean, you go way down. And, I mean, I don't know what job's going to come open I'm interested in. If LSU doesn't come open, like LT for a stake bet could give me five picks on Lane Kiffin's next job.
Right.
And if LSU's not it, I don't know which job he takes. Like, I believe if I am Georgia Tech and I am Lane Kiffin, that's a match made in heaven. But Paul Johnson on this ranking at 18, I don't know if they're ever going to pull the trigger on Paul Johnson. And if so, I don't know if Lane would get a look, but that would be a fantastic fantastic landing spot for him. North Carolina would be interesting to me if I was Lane. I mean, after those three in the top 20, I mean, where are you going?
I know. And, I mean, look, throw Neil Brown in this conversation too, the Troy coach. He's going to be one of the hot names out there when Troy has the season they'll probably have this year.
A little different.
It is.
I don't know why I think of Neil differently when he has had equal success to Lane Kiffin almost.
Hey, well, go to the job. But
they're making, I think, of the same amount of money too, Dunaway. I think Neil Brown, if it's a money factor, he's making as much at Troy as Lane is. And I'm going to say that $800,000 goes a little further in Troy, Alabama than it does in Boca.
Yeah, a lot further.
So if it's just a money thing, I mean, the Troy job and the Florida Atlantic job are a lot alike.
Hey, randomly, number 34 on this list. Would he take that job?
I don't. My list only goes to 30.
34 is Hawaii?
Ooh.
Nick Rolovich. I mean, that's an interesting job because June Jones, I mean, had him a relevant team.
It is.
Boy, I just don't know if what can you do down there? You're never on TV.
The recruiting.
Recruiting's a headache.
So hard.
It's such a headache.
He knows the West Coast, though, and it seems like you're getting better athletes out of Hawaii.
I don't know what their budget is anymore. Yeah. I mean, I think back in the June Jones days, they had a little better budget situation than they do now.
Here's my question. If I could take a booster with me, if I could take Boone Pickens with me.
And have all the money I needed?
And it's a combination of Boone Pickens and me.
Yeah.
Then I could take Hawaii because then I can jump on the, you know, my jet that Boone has given me to go recruit anywhere I want to recruit and bring people in. It just is so hard.
The funny thing is, when you look at this top 25 on Coach's Hot Seat, the only jobs that will get Lane fired up probably aren't coming open, or they wouldn't hire him. Like, Auburn's not coming open. That would get Lane fired up. He'd take Auburn in a hurry.
Okay, let me give you a realistic
Michigan would hire him.
Mark Stoops at Kentucky. He's making $4 million in 6 years. I didn't realize the record was as bad as it is, 26 and 36. I thought it was more 7 and 5s every year. But if Mark Stoops took another job or did get fired, do you think he would take the Kentucky job?
Yes.
No.
I think he would. It's an SEC job. It's in the preferable division. My best of the weekend watched The Greatest Showman on Movie Family.
Was it good?
Family Movie Night. I really liked it.
Yeah. I've heard it's good. I've heard, you know, back and forth. I mean, some people, because a lot of people don't like musicals.
I can't stand them.
You know, it is to a point you're like, okay, let's don't sing a song about this too. But I think the overall movie is really, really well done.
He is right now one of the top 10 most talented guys out there because he can do everything.
Yeah, he is so good. But then I do what I always did. I did the Wikipedia on P.T. Barnum, and they're... It turns out he didn't walk around singing everywhere.
Not a very nice guy, was he?
Yeah, and that, I mean, they just really don't get close. I mean, I think I like Hugh Jackman's version of P.T. Barnum better than the actual P.T. Barnum.
I wish P.T. was really that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I just picked up The Office. I can't believe how politically incorrect they are on network television and got away with it. Yeah, I just started watching my kids watch it on Netflix.
The Office is terrific.
But the reason I was going to bring it up, they did an episode. We jump all over the place, so there's no rhyme or reason to what episode we're watching, but nepotism. And Michael from The Office was talking about he doesn't know how Ringling Brothers did it for so long.
Yeah.
They were so good at it.
You got to watch The Dinner Party. It's the most uncomfortable episode of all time.
Well, the fire drill was the first one I ever saw. I thought it was incredible. The Christmas parties, the Benihana.
Yeah. Benihana Christmas.
Yeah. So good.
Have you seen Diversity Day? If you want to talk politically incorrect.
Diversity Day.
Some people might say you can't drive. Oh, man, I'm a woman.
Jewish.
But he brought the two girls back from Benihana to the Christmas party, and he had to mark one's arm where you could tell them apart. Unbelievable.
What a great show. I cannot believe you're just now around to that one. That is a funny show.
That's what she said. Seth writes in, just watched the Dinner Party episode of The Office this morning. Second and Tua says The Office is the greatest comedy of all time over Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You're probably not going to get universal agreement on that. I do think they deserve consideration.
It's a great Dreamland Barbecue poll question. We can throw some people in there with The Office. Dreamland Barbecue ain't nothing like them nowhere.
Yeah, hopefully you had an opportunity to send someone some Dreamland this past weekend for Father's Day. Again, you can go online, ship ribs, white bread, and sauce anywhere in America. Go to dreamlandbbq.com. Dreamland Barbecue ain't nothing like them nowhere. I watched a little bit of Seinfeld. I love Curb. Curb's probably my number one. I would go Silicon Valley too. And right now, just early blush, I've only seen probably 10 episodes. I would go The Office number 3.
I mean, people are going to want Cheers to be included in that. I mean, that's a classic. Frasier, a lot of people.
I wouldn't consider The Office as in a sitcom. That's that mockumentary.
It's a mockumentary. It's its own category, really.
I'll tell you what was good and just lost me was Modern Family.
That was terrific. First couple of seasons was great.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, the kids got old.
Well, and the chick was just too much to handle.
Sophia. Well, I mean, Lance, you don't like Sophia. I think that's a personal issue with you. I think a lot of people do.
No, I think she was over the top for most people. I mean, I like looking at her.
Yeah, she was obnoxious, and their kid was obnoxious, too.
Cut her tongue out, she'd be fine.
But once the, once the kids got older, though, Modern Family lost a little bit. Yeah, it was much better with younger kids.
What was the one? The writing that was really good. It was Modern Family's writing was good too, but even like writing wasn't as crisp as it was early on.
Well, I just think it's so hard, isn't it?
So hard to keep. But a tackle that run blocked on every play was not NFL ready, much less number 2 pick overall. Is that the way you ended up seeing him?
Dunaway, it seemed like there was a lack of discipline when it came to Greg Robinson, to be honest with you.
And, you know, what he's talking about is what used to, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's what used to plague the triple option guys. You had running backs that never really caught passes out of the backfield, so they didn't translate well to the NFL. And you had linemen that never pass blocked, so they didn't translate. And then you had quarterbacks that only run the triple option. So there was a lot of times for those triple option teams, their offensive players just were of no use to the NFL.
Didn't we have some offensive linemen that actually had good careers coming out of Auburn under Gus Malzahn? Was Ben Grubbs not under Malzahn?
Mm-mm. That was more Tuberville.
Okay.
I get confused on when offense. There have been a lot of offensive linemen to have success in the NFL, obviously. I get confused on when and who played offensive line for whom. But Grubbs seemed like a long
Grubbs
time
ago. Grubbs is good. No, Grubbs, he was Tuberville. He's 100% Tuberville. Yeah. Grubbs is obviously a good NFL lineman. That's a criticism that gets put on some of those offensive schemes. And it's not Gus Malzahn's fault. He's just winning football games. That's what he's getting paid to do. Or he's trying to win them. That's what he's getting paid to do.
Speaking of drafts, the NBA draft is coming up Thursday night. Colin Sexton, one of a handful of guys invited to the draft site to see the draft happening this weekend. It'll be interesting to watch what the NBA does. And the offseason continues. Over the weekend, Kawhi Leonard made news. And he came out and said he does not want to be in San Antonio. He's done.
Yeah, and I think this is a point of no return. I don't know if San Antonio is going to be really up to working anything out with the Los Angeles Lakers, knowing the history between Popovich and L.A., but it seems like this is irreparable. And I don't think Kawhi is going to be a San Antonio Spur. Now, there's a lot of people that believe Boston could be a destination for him. But if I was to tell you guys right now that Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James both end up in Los Angeles next year, do you think they're good enough to beat Golden State?
I do not.
With Paul George?
With Paul George.
I know you. Yeah, I think they are. That doesn't change it. You think they are without Paul George?
No, I think it would be interesting. LeBron still is arguably the best player on the planet, right? Kawhi's a top five guy. I mean, when you talk about what he does both ways.
But you keep calling Golden State one of, if not the best assembled team of all time. It's hard to imagine that that group would beat that kind of, and I don't, you know, I debate you all the time about whether they're the greatest of all time, but they're in the conversation. And I'm not sure.
But I think LeBron
and
Kawhi
piece together another greatest of all time team. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, but here's what I would say. If we're comparing the Bulls, to me, LeBron and Kawhi right now would be as good as Michael and Scottie.
And I couldn't argue that. Now, can you get something to match Draymond and
Klay Thompson?
Klay Thompson.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would make things much more interesting.
But I think it also might have an adverse effect if you're looking at it from a Lakers' point of view, that it might be the thing that re-energizes Golden State, right? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Look, they'll get focused quickly.
Yeah.
But the Lakers right now 6-1 to win the title. Because, I mean, this is a team that didn't sniff the playoffs last year.
Because I don't think Golden State ever felt like Houston was that big a threat. They would feel like this is a bigger threat.
Though those odds reflecting they think LeBron's going to end up in Las Vegas. I mean, Los Angeles.
First down.
What happens first? Ricky Fowler wins a major or LeBron wins another ring? All golf related.
I'll go Ricky Fowler wins a major. He is close all the time, and it would seem impossible to be that close all the time without winning one.
He got engaged, though.
He got engaged and then was close. He shot a 65 yesterday.
He's close all the time. He teamed off yesterday before they even had the A crew on Fox. Yeah. They had some guys I didn't even know.
I got out of bed.
That's one tournament. Go back and look at his majors career. He's hang on. I'll pull it up for you. I mean, you don't think Ricky Fowler is close a lot?
I mean, Ricky Fowler is my answer here too, because of the Golden State Warriors and Boston and others.
Would most people consider Ricky Fowler the greatest golfer in the world right now that he's yet to win a major?
Probably yes. I mean,
and that was Sergio, I guess.
He finished tied for 20th, but an 84 on Saturday.
No, 84 was terrible. Now, Saturday was a brutal day, obviously.
Well, you take his 84 and you give him the average, he might win the thing.
I mean, his last, just going back to last year, tied 11th in Augusta, tied 5th U.S. Open, tied 22nd at the British, tied 5th PGA, 2nd Masters, and then tied 20th this week. I mean, you know, you got the 22nd and the 20th that are outliers, but there's four where he's top 10, basically. I mean, he's in the hunt a lot, and then you had 2014 where he was 5th, 2nd, 2nd, and 3rd. He'll win one, I think.
There's long way from 5th to 1st in a major.
Okay.
I'll go LeBron.
Second down.
These get a little more difficult. Okay. What happens first? Patrick Reed wins his next major or Urban Meyer wins his next national championship?
I think I'm going to go with a golfer again. I'm going to take Patrick Reed here. I don't know that I would have said this before this week, but to see his performance in the U.S. Open after breaking through at the Masters.
He can play.
It's very impressive, yeah. I mean, most guys, like I said, they win that first major, and they'll disappear for a good year.
He did wear Huskies as a kid, right?
Probably so. He won that first major, and there he was, right back in contention at the U.S. I'll go with him.
I'm going to go Urban Meyer. But I'm probably wrong. But Ohio State.
I like your conviction here.
Well, I mean, Patrick Reed looked good yesterday coming off that Masters win.
I mean, Urban's going to win another one, Dunaway, but it could be a 3 or 4 years, and Patrick Reed could have, you know, 12 opportunities by the time that happens.
Both of them are ifs and coulds. I understand that.
I think
Ohio State made a call on the quarterback over the weekend. Urban says it's Dwayne Haskins. Doesn't surprise anybody. Tate Martell's guy, he's going to compete and be the backup, but Haskins is the guy. I mean, they could be in the mix this year. They're expected to be in the playoffs this year. Some said they should have been in it last year. They won it in 2014. I'm gonna take Urban Meyer.
Here's the weird thing about Reed. He had zero majors success prior to this year.
Zero
or
top
prior
tens.
To the end of last year.
And now three consecutive top 10 major finishes.
Top second, first, and fourth in his last three. Just out of nowhere, the guy has become a tremendous majors player recently.
Third down.
More parity in golf right now or college football?
I would say golf.
Yeah. I think golf, and here's another question that leads to that, and this might be my new favorite golfer. What happens first? Tommy Fleetwood wins a major, or Dan Mullen actually gets Florida to a 14 playoff?
Why do you like Fleetwood so much?
Because he's been really good lately.
I just like how he rocks a dirty mullet and doesn't care. I mean, he looks like a dude that, I mean, you pulled him out of a, I don't know.
Here's a guy, though, that outside the U.S. Open has got zero major success. I mean, none. He plays well at the U.S. Open back-to-back years. But outside of that, hasn't even been close to contention.
What did he do at the Masters this year? Was he not close?
You have to give me a second to pull it up. I know he hasn't done much.
He's still young. He's 27.
He is. He
dominated the European Tour.
Yeah. He's just now coming on. Right? Yeah. He's just now showing up here in the U.S.
At this year's Masters.
But to play as bad as he did Saturday.
Tied 17.
Turn around and play like he did on Sunday.
Yeah.
By the way, Dunaway, that was his best majors finish outside of U.S. Open. Tied 17th at the Masters.
Well, how many has he played?
Two Masters. He's played four British. He's missed the cut three times. Three PGAs. He's missed the cut twice. Three U.S. Opens. He's got two top four finishes and a tied 27.
If I told you, though, he runs an illegal moonshine still.
Could see it.
Steals copper wire.
Could see it.
Works at a biker bar.
Could see it.
Is a concert roadie.
Could see
or
it.
Or a professional golfer.
That would be last.
Yeah.
Plays Jesus in the Easter play.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like
he
plays Jesus in the Easter play right away.
Needs to eat a little bit, but.
Yeah.
Fourth down.
Okay, moving forward. More major wins. Brooks Koepka or the combination of Tiger Phil?
Oh, I'll take Koepka.
I would have said after last year, Koepka never wins another one, though.
I know, but then you see him do this.
Okay, so just to get this, I think this is factual. He has got one PGA Tour win, and he's got two majors. Is that right?
Well, I mean, those obviously count as Tour wins,
yeah,
but
so
you mean
got
just on the regular
three
Tour.
Three total wins, but two are majors.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So strange.
It is. I think I'm going to take Koepka as well.
As much as they are storylines, it is hard to see Tiger and Phil winning again. So every time they play well here or they win a non-major tournament somewhere else, to go and do it on a major Sunday, it's still far-fetched to see that happening at their age. Right?
Yeah, and did Phil this weekend, I know he had a really bad moment, but beyond that, does he look like a guy that's particularly close to winning majors?
No.
No.
And that bad moment, I think, could be a sign that says, okay,
that was
the door closing.
You know,
yeah.
One of my takeaways, and I know I didn't bring him up in this four downs, but if Spieth doesn't bogey 17 and 18 on Friday, there's a chance he wins this tournament.
I know.
Yeah, those guys that were on the cut line were tied for the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, all he had to do was straighten it out one day.
Yeah.
And he's back in it. So, yeah, Koepka won at Phoenix, the Waste Management, where they have the party, Super Bowl Sunday. And then his other two wins are U.S. Open, U.S. Open.
Crazy.
So basically, he's really good when there are idiots screaming in the crowd.
Very much so. You're right about
He'll
that.
He'll never win the Masters.
Yes.
And Mexico is the U.S. biggest rival in soccer. It's Alabama-Auburn of soccer in this region. Not in the world, but in this region.
But just it's not as competitive as Alabama and Auburn, right? I mean, Mexico's had the better end of us.
Back and forth.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's pretty competitive.
Fair enough.
Pulling from Mexico because of just things you hated from the 40s, or
I like the upset factor.
A little black eye.
That Germany's the defending World Cup champions, and you know Mexico was the underdog. I like to see upsets.
They're our neighbor too, Jim.
And they are, and they're in CONCACAF, which is sort of in this analogy now. It's like the SEC, and people all the time say, Dunaway, how can I? You know, some fans cheer SEC when we get to bowl season or the playoffs or the NCAA tournament. And some people say, you know, how can I cheer for my rivals?
CONCACAF. It even works, really.
It really does. But they
probably doesn't have the same punch.
They were not chanting that when they upset Germany. Biggest win in Mexican soccer history. Landon Donovan is doing that commercial. And listen, the Volkswagen one drives me crazy. Jump on our wagon.
Yeah.
You know, they keep rubbing in that we're not in it. So jump here, cheer for Belize or Belgium, not Belize. Cheer for Belgium.
All right.
I cheer for Belize all the time. Cheer for Belgium. Cheer for Argentina. And they tell us why we should cheer for them. That one gets on my nerves, just rubbing it in. Well, Landon Donovan does a Wells Fargo commercial where he is cheering for Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a series of commercials, and he has taken some heat from his former teammates, including Sebastian Salazar, who says, "Please don't do it, American soccer fans. The rivalry, with all its rancor and spite, is the defining element of soccer in our region. Watering it down for beer and banks won't enrich the rivalry. Just Alexi Lalas and Landon Donovan, two former players who are doing
qualify
the advertising."
Qualify for the tournament.
Yeah, you say qualify.
But
qualify
Rockstar,
for the tournament.
Okay, but if and then understand my analogy to follow up on Jim's analogy.
Just go SEC championship.
Alabama and Georgia are playing for, well, that's Alabama and Georgia. Alabama and Clemson are playing for the national championship. If Gus Malzahn is on a commercial saying, "Hey, roll tide, I'm all for Alabama," how does that feel?
Be a bad look.
That's a really bad look.
That's what Taylor Twelman says. You see him on ESPN. He's a former U.S. player. He said, "I'd rather cut off my toe than root for Mexico. And I'm on the outside on this one, but how could I root for my rival? Imagine any player rooting for your rival. I can't imagine how the American Outlaws, the big following for American soccer, would feel if I rooted for Mexico. But then again, I'm old school."
It does feel dirty to me. It feels like you've just really sold out if you're Landon Donovan. Now, we'll sell out on this show. I don't deny we won't.
I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert, LLC.